Attorney General Marty Jackley recently announced that South Dakota has joined a multi-state friend of the court brief against the federal government and in support of the Keystone XL pipeline. We talked with Attorney General Jackley yesterday about the action. Today, we're hearing from USD law professor Mayanna Dellinger for another viewpoint. One of her specialties is international environmental law. I started by asking about the significance of a friend of the court brief.
The significance is that obviously the friends of the court, so the amicus in this case, are not the states that have weighed in on this issue. So they're not, in other words, legal parts to the legal lawsuit, but they are welcome and they do submit these briefs, hoping that the judges and the judges' research clerks will read them. And so they make sure they add their viewpoints and their legal opinions about the matter, even though they're not a part to the actual lawsuit.
And is that something that's weighed in with a fair amount of weight, or is it sort of cast aside in general?
You know, that depends on each individual judge before whom these lawsuits are brought. So I know some judges rely on them a lot and others, you know, may not rely on them as heavily. And that is something I think the general public may never really know. Sometimes courts cite to them, but sometimes not. So you never really know to what extent they have listen to all the arguments in there, but it simply is an option for the general public, if you think about it that way, to weigh in on a given issue, hoping that the courts will read it. But obviously the courts do their own research too, so it's again just a matter of all different interested parties in submitting legal arguments, and then the courts sift through all this and then find whatever the courts themselves think is the right solution.
So if I understand it correctly, essentially what we are saying as the state of South Dakota is that our public officials have approved Keystone XL and that the federal government is standing in the way of that sort of economic development. Am I getting the general gist of it? I'm sure it's more nuanced than that, but is that the...
Yes, it is more nuanced than that. So what they're saying is that President Obama, in this case, does not have the power to regulate interstate and international commerce. And since this is a project coming from Canada, this affects the states and even the two nations. So Congress can regulate that only. And that might be true, but they forget to add the fact that the president does have clear foreign policy powers. And that in this case, nothing actually is more international in nature than climate change. And also that now the president is vetoing this project under the foreign policy power, not under the commerce clauses, as what they're complaining about. But again, he's vetoing it under the foreign policy power, saying that, and this is correct, I think, that approving the pipeline would hurt the efforts that this country is now trying to take to persuade other countries to take ambitious action to combat a global environmental threat, and that's climate change, and that approving this project actually would also be against our national U.S. interest now that we have a clear agreement that all nations have agreed that we should try to limit climate change around the world. So that's the powers under which he's taking this action. And it's interesting, I think, that presidents taking actions under the foreign policy power has not been challenged for more than 150 years until right now. And in fact, Congress tried to force the president to approve this project in 2011, so just a few years ago, under the very same power that they now say that he doesn't have now, that he doesn't want to approve it. So they're trying to make him approve it now that he's disapproving it. Now they're saying he doesn't have that power. That just doesn't make sense.
Can you articulate the argument from the other side from an economic development standpoint?
Yes, thanks for reminding me about that, too, because that is part of it, too. So the two big arguments are we need this pipeline, and this could lead to plenty of jobs, and some of these regions need jobs, and that also it would add billions of dollars in economic activity. So first about the jobs, this Keystone XL pipeline project would actually only add 50 permanent jobs while it's in operation, 50 only. And then a few thousand while they would have been building the project. So those would have all been temporary jobs. On the other side of that is the fact that for 50 permanent jobs could easily be added in other sectors, you know, solar energy, wind power, you know, even, you know, other alternative energy fields. It's easy to create 50 jobs in that. And so about the billions of dollars that in economic activity that are lost, it is true that it, the pipeline would be a 3.4 billion boost to the economy, but that's only 0.02% of the GDP, so not a whole lot, and again, economic activity and jobs that could easily be created in other sectors that are less that are more environmentally friendly.
So is this more of a commerce issue, or is it more of an environmental and climate change issue?
So the economy and economists have agreed that if we don't take action against what we now know are facts about climate change, that's going to cost us a lot more money in the long run, with health and different issues, economic issues, even national security threats. So it's, to be completely honest, it seems like this whole pipeline thing has sort of become, it has become, I think, a political proxy for the much bigger debate of how we should have, you know, what kind of energy we should use, you know, who has political powers, you know, the power struggles in Washington, D.C. And also, to be completely honest, a hugely powerful fossil fuel industry that I think is beginning to see the writing on the wall and naturally is resisting it. But as a nation, we should just not give in, I think, to just one particular industry. It's true that that the people working in that industry and the industry itself stands to lose some jobs, I think, and some money. But most people and most experts realize that the reality is that we simply have to leave fossil fuels in the ground. Scientists agree on that, and economists are beginning to realize the same thing. So it's true that it's tough for people, I think, to lose jobs in this respect. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, and the debate is about some people losing jobs, the people that work in the oil and coal industries. But as somebody said recently, it's also tough for others to die from air pollution and lose the coast, the islands they live on, or lose the coastal areas where they live. So it's not like, you know, you could just keep building these projects and then no one gets hurt. People will get hurt, you know, if you do that even. So it's a matter of seeing it from a broader angle. Fossil fuel is not a nice, clean industry, and they had a good run of it. So, you know, unfortunately, time seems to be over. But again, it's important to note you could shift jobs to other industries.
What's the role of a state government? And when you talk about climate change, mm-hmm. we're talking about a global issue. What's the role of a state government for a global issue? Because that seems to sort of blur the lines.
Especially when you, like in this case, when you reach international issues as well. And so, again, the states and Congress have the power to regulate commercial issues. That's true under something called the Commerce Clause. But again, because this is of international nature, the president, and correctly so, says that he has something called the foreign policy power, and this overlaps, you're right, it's kind of not blurred lines, but overlapping areas of legal influence and so forth. And so, so the president does have foreign policy powers that are recognized in the Constitution. They split it up in three different areas. Some, they say, are really clear when it comes to war powers, for instance, and some are less clear, and this is considered to be sort of the middle ground area where it's a little bit of a gray area exactly how much power he or she has. But again, in more than 150 years of congressional action and politics, this, you know, taking such action similar to this has not been challenged legally until right now. So it's kind of a new challenge. To challenge indirectly so his foreign policy powers, and they sort of, like I said, the argument isn't, you know, the argument that South Dakota and the others that submitted the Friends of the Court argument are presenting is that that only Congress and states can regulate interstate and international commerce, but again, that's only part of the whole legal story here.
When we talk about transitioning to more sustainable energy sources, is there a pace to do that at, or is there a way, a methodology to do that that does protect the economy, or is there just going to be an economic impact that regular citizens will see immediately?
So some citizens, I think, might see, you know, some of the local impact immediately. Again, if people had hoped to build this pipeline and now it's not going to be built, that may be an immediate negative impact. That's true. And I think it's important to recognize the fact that it's losing a job is a significant life event that has a very significant impact on people. In fact, I saw a study recently that said that losing a job is actually more psychologically traumatic than having a leg amputated. So that's unfortunate, but I think it's important then to realize those jobs that stand to lose, those people that stand to lose jobs here and now should be helped financially, so at least they don't have a financially adverse impact from this. But again, it sort of is a little bit like, you know, when we changed away from using film or typewriters, that it is true some people lost their jobs, and that's a bad thing, but it's also important to remember that so many others then got other types of jobs, you know, as these trends, technological trends happen here in society. New types of jobs are created in new industries, and it will here too in either solar or wind or new technologies that haven't even been invented yet, maybe because we've seen so much reluctance and so much resistance in our country against development into new green technologies or new green energy technologies, because again the oil and coal industry is just significantly powerful and has resisted this. Of course they would, because it's, you know, their industry. But again, times are changing, and it is in the energy field as well. So I think what it's mainly about, to be honest, is about realizing that that industries are changing, and that's just what is going on right now. Again, internationally, we have agreed, all nations, that we need to do something about climate change. It's just too dangerous, and it's going to have too big of an effect on nations around the world and economies. So I think that's what we're forgetting in this debate, and that the new economies, like I said, new energy economies, can actually also add a lot of jobs. I see that being forgotten again and again and again. And also the fact that early on the president actually said that he would approve this project only if it doesn't significantly exacerbate carbon dioxide emissions, and it would. So even though they're transporting now some of this oil through the smaller pipelines, adding this much bigger, much more powerful pipeline would have been the equivalent of putting an extra between 250,000 and 5.5 million cars on the road just each year. So it clearly has or would have had some environmental effect also. And I think interestingly is also the fact that scientific experts say that realistically this pipeline would have resulted in 100 significant oil spills over the lifetime of just 50 years, which is the same as two major oil spills in our Midwestern countryside per year. Just in 2010 to 2011, there were 12 major oil spills from brand new state-of-the-art pipelines, and one was as big as a six-story geyser that dumped 21,000 gallons of oil in North Dakota. And in this year, we also saw a spill in Hutchinson County in South Dakota. So it's definitely not a project that would have had only positive effects on the economy and on jobs. It would have also had significant environmental impacts and had a lot of landowners worried in our Midwestern regions.
What's at stake of not building it?
So in addition to the alleged now lacking boost to the economy, it's also important to remember that when some highlight the fact that it would have been a boost to the economy, that presumes oil prices remaining at the same level as they used to be until just recently. But you know what? The fact is that they're not. They're falling drastically. So now oil prices are right now right around in the high 20s, so around $29 per barrel. That's 70% lower than in 2014. And so a lot of the economic predictions about this particular Keystone XL pipeline is that for it to make economic sense, the oil prices would have had to have been at least $60 a barrel just for this one pipeline, and maybe $90 a barrel or so for other oil projects in Canada for it to even make sense. So a lot of the financial economic arguments that are brought forward actually don't make sense anymore because oil prices have fallen so much recently. And that in addition to the other jobs that I said could be created in other industries.
The economic model has changed.
The economic model has changed, and what often gets forgotten, or what gets forgotten hugely in this debate, is that the economic model for instance, solar power alternatives, sources of power, are somehow forgotten about in these calculations. But if they're brought into the picture, you know, for some reason I haven't seen any figures, I'm sure they exist, but again, that gets ignored in this debate, and it shouldn't be, because that is the future, and that could arguably create certainly the same amount of jobs, but also a significant amount of money on a much more sustainable framework than oil.
Mayanna Dellinger, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your time.
Sure, you're very welcome.